Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, September 17th. I'm Hannah Floor. Folks in rural Alaska don't get a ton of visiting arts performances. Alaska's remote geography complicates things. But this fall, a New York-based dance company is stopping in 10 cities and towns around the state. And Emerge 125 will perform in Petersburg tonight. KFSK sat down with artistic director and choreographer Tiffany Ray Fisher and dancer Alyssa Manginero. The group has been around for more than two decades and is based in New York City's Harlem, as well as the Adirondacks of upstate New York. Ray Fisher says it's important to her to have the influence of the natural world.
All of the great artists and great choreographers always had a house out in the country or something up in the woods, and it just, that connection between the arts and nature is so important for inspiration and for clarity in your mind and your spirit for creation. So being able to have our programming and our dancers throughout the state is really important to us, and that it not just be New York City based, but that it was New York as a state, that we were able to kind of claim the beauty and the hustle of it all.
Can you tell me what sets Emerge 125 apart from other dance companies in New York City and in the state of New York?
I think what sets Emerge 125 apart is the intentionality of the creation of why we're all here together. I'm very, very specific about who comes into our space because it's highly curated. The people that come to me through auditions, it takes typically years from the first time that I've seen you to you signing the contract, because I really want to make sure that your being, your spirit, your talent, your technique, your skill set, all of that is coming together. And I think about it kind of this way of like, on our worst day, do we still want to be here? Right? And if the answer is yes, then Emerge 125 is a place for you. So that's on the rehearsal side of it. On the performance side, I think what sets us apart is the physical bodies on stage. I really want to make sure that the company is representative of the audiences that we serve. And so people in the audience hopefully will see someone that looks like them or feels like them in spirit on stage, so they have an entry point into the work. And then it's also really physically rigorous, so it has that athleticism that I think gets people excited about the art of dance.
So Alyssa, you're a dancer with the company. You've been with them for 4 years. I want to know what you love about dancing with this group.
Not only does the company emphasize dancing in the most joyful way, it's a challenge. Tiffany's movement is very challenging in the best way, artistry-wise, physically-wise. It's very athletic.
Can you tell me where your mind goes when you're dancing? Like, what is it that brings you that joy when you're moving your body that sets it apart from the rest of the day?
I think where my mind goes with Tiffany's movement specifically, it's very intricate. It's very fast a lot of the times. I like being challenged, so my mind is constantly working. And within dance, if something doesn't work out on stage, especially in the moment, you have to fix it. And I like that part of using my brain in a different way than when I'm just being my regular self.
When you say you have to fix it, you have to figure out how to get your body back to the place it needs to be. Is that what you mean?
So on stage, what we always say is it's live theater, so anything can happen. So if a costume goes wrong, if you miss your facing, you miss your cue, I think that in real time, fixing that is very interesting to me.
Huh. Okay. Tiffany, can you talk a little bit about the choreography for the pieces that people will see?
Yes. So the program has five different pieces, as Jody said. The first piece is a full company piece, and it is titled Polystring Theory to the Music of Kaiser Quartet. They're a newish quartet, a German quartet, and I sat with the music for a while, but then I couldn't sit with it anymore. Like, I had to jump out of the seat and create something to it, and the dancers loved it, and I loved it, and so it became iterative, and then we just had to, like, keep creating, and I think that I'm at a stopping point. I'm very happy with where it was, but it was one of those things that I wasn't trying to, like, oh, I still have this much music left. What can I do? It's like I was just running with the music alongside me, which was really beautiful. The next piece is Memphis Hesitation, which is a jazz piece, but not jazz in the way that you would kind of think about it. It's like a bluegrass, like it has a bluegrass feel, and it was just a pure music study in joy and fun. So that one was, it's part of a bigger work, so this is just excerpt, but it was just fun, and I think it took me, I mean, it flew out of my body, that movement, which is really wonderful when that happens, because that's not always the case. And the third piece, Behavioral Synchrony, is what Jody was speaking about, and that I was really curious and interested and fascinated with the idea of the heartbeat connecting all of us. And so I just started with the metronome and just getting that pulse. And as I started making the movement, I was like, I really need a very particular type of collaborator on this because of what I was trying to get to. And the music duo, who are DJs, Hallucination, I reached out to them, and they're from two different Native clans, and they're in Ottawa, and they were so game, they were so excited, and the only kind of caveat was that I not use any traditional movement. So it's all very modern dance movement, but it is beautiful, and I think because of the origins of the music, they understood kind of this intellectual, spiritual, emotional journey that I was going on, and I'm really happy with where we landed.
That was Tiffany Ray Fisher, artistic director and choreographer with New York's Emerge 125, and dancer Alyssa Manginero, talking with KFSK. The group will perform tonight in KFSK's Wright Auditorium at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at the door and on the Petersburg Arts Council website. That's at petersburgarts.com. They're $25 for adults and $15 for kids. However, there are a limited number of free kids tickets available for families that have a hard time with the ticket price. You can get more information about that by emailing petersburgarts@gmail.com. Nearly 200 guests from 10 countries gathered in Ketchikan last week for a conference all about farming seaweed. The Sea Agriculture Summit, or Seagriculture, has its roots in Europe, but for the past 2 years has included a U.S. edition hosted in Maine. Kuno Jacobs is the managing director of the DLG Benelux, the company that organizes the conference. He says while Maine is currently America's biggest seaweed producer, Alaska is right behind it.
Alaska is a number two, and especially because Alaska is in the, let's say, in the early stages of developing the industry. And the Sea Aquaculture Conference is all about fostering a dialogue, learning from one another. So we all believe that would be a perfect fit for Alaska and the right momentum to do it.
Jacob says the industry's potential here is huge. Alaska has more miles of coastline than all the lower 48 states combined, a fact that was frequently cited by speakers at the conference. Much of that coastline has ideal conditions for growing seaweed, and as the state's fishing industry has declined, many see mariculture as an exciting new economic sector. The total pounds of seaweed harvested in Alaska skyrocketed in 2021 and 2022, but fell sharply last year. Farmers at the conference said they can produce more, but there aren't enough buyers. Much of the focus now is on developing those markets. Jacob said the markets exist. Big companies are interested in seaweed or its byproducts. But he says we're stuck in a chicken versus the egg moment.
There is a demand. But those multinationals, they don't know what is small. So if they move in big. And at the moment, the seaweed industry can't supply those volumes and at a steady, let's say, quality. So everyone is kind of looking to one another, the chicken and the egg.
Jacob says the conference tried to address that by bringing representatives from across the value chain into the same room to start conversations about getting Alaska's potential supply matched with demand. Juneau residents took to the Capitol last week to protest Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of a bill that would have expanded access to birth control. Von Krumrie reports from Juneau.
Birth control is a human right.
Birth control is a human right.
Birth control is a human right.
Birth control.
Dozens gather on the sidewalk across from the Alaska State Capitol building, holding pink and cardboard signs saying, Healthcare is a right, not a privilege. And reproductive freedom by any means necessary. And about half the group are teenagers who can't vote yet. Virginia Douglas High School, Yedaat Katle, senior Nova Breaks Hines, the specter of limited reproductive care, has haunted her for 2 years, and her family for longer.
My mom was a teen mother and didn't really have the right to choose, and Roe v. Wade is something that's been affecting me since I was 15, and it got overturned. So it's just really important to me.
She says she wants to have control over her own future.
I am a really hardworking student, and I do a lot of things to try to make the best future for myself. And so the idea that that could be stripped away from me at any moment, even if it's not my choice, is really terrifying for me and a lot of young women.
And she says that when she can, she'll vote the politicians who are trying to take that away out of office. House Bill 17 would have required health insurance companies to provide birth control for 12 months at a time. Now they only cover 1 to 3 months before patients would have to return to the pharmacy or provider. And while going back to the pharmacy regularly is inconvenient for people in larger cities, it can be impossible in rural communities. Supanika Ordonez says she was at the protest too.
And there's a big difference when you can get a year's worth of prescription versus just like month at a time. Especially if you don't have access to a pharmacy, it's really prohibitive to like have to keep going back.
Juneau Representative Sarah Hannon, who's a Democrat, says that for people working and living in remote communities, the delays in receiving their prescriptions could lead to lapses in taking the medication, which impacts its effectiveness.
But across Alaska, the de facto norm is mail-out prescriptions. And we know if there's a mail delay and you can't get a renewal till 90 days and they don't send it till day 87 and the mail doesn't get there till it's day 92 and you've had a 5-day gap in your contraceptive, that's a problem.
And she says she's frustrated by the veto because she thought the legislature had worked out any concerns with the bill in the many years it spent in committee. It also had bipartisan support.
So I think because this bill had been worked on for 8 years, right? This wasn't its first rodeo. I've been in the legislature 3 terms. It had already been there before I got elected. And I think we believed that those concerns had been addressed. This isn't introducing any new process or techniques. It's just giving a consumer an access to a drug that they need.
In a statement, a spokesperson for Dunleavy told Alaska Public Media that, quote, contraceptives are widely available, and compelling insurance companies to provide mandatory coverage for a year is bad policy, end quote. But Juneau Senator Jesse Heal, also a Democrat, says the veto doesn't make sense, and it wasn't expected.
It was an incomprehensible veto, and you can hear people are really upset about it. They should be.
In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Licensing for some food products made in Alaska is now a little looser. That's after Governor Mike Dunleavy signed House Bill 251 last month. The bill allows certain farm food products or homemade food and drinks to be sold to consumers without having state labeling and licensing, eliminating previous restrictions on some rural farmers and the cottage food industry in Alaska. The legislation also allows consumers to get meat from a producer by purchasing an ownership share of an animal, like a cow for beef. On Kodiak Island, some farmers were already allowing residents to buy shares in animal products like goat's milk. State Representative George Rauscher, a Republican from Sutton who sponsored the legislation, said in a statement, quote, "This legislation positions Alaska to sustain ourselves independently, reducing our reliance on external sources as shipping costs rise," end quote. The bill also allows the Board of Agriculture and Conservation, which is part of the State Department of Natural Resources, to make loans available to Alaska farmers for paying the cost of shipping to and within the state for specific reasons. Kelly Foreman, the Alaska State Committee Chair for the USDA's Farm Service Agency, said she was happy to see Dunleavy support food security through this bill. For KFSK, I'm Hannah Floor.